Welcome to Tales of the Lesser Medium, a podcast that pokes fun at video game narratives. I'm your narrator, Caleb J. Ross, and I'm joined by my co-host.
What a wonderful time to be here with you, Caleb. I'm very happy to be recording an episode of Tales. I will be introducing listeners to my German accent throughout the night, and I know a lot of people clicked on this disappointed that we weren't doing a spookier game for Halloween, but what's spookier than when Germans have a plan?
Oh, that's true. Notoriously bad at engineering, the Germans. Is that what you're saying? That's the angle you're on it, right?
Well, not quite. They're okay. Pretty good at that part, actually.
Yeah.
That's a fault.
That's true. All their stuff works, goddammit.
It's boo. True.
Oh, yeah, that was my co-host, Travis, in case you couldn't tell, underneath that amazing, I want to say, Indian accent?
Nine?
No, ooh, okay. I know that one. It's a kindergarten accent. Learning to count joke. As always, we'll be taking you through our favorite video game franchise narratives, interjecting with all sorts of jokery along the way to make you laugh and to make us wish that we had that bionic arm with a grappling hook to help us infiltrate the secret base of Zombie Hitler. You know, and once we're done with that, then we get to keep the bionic arm grappling hook to help us infiltrate the not-so-secret neighbor's rooftop where I threw a frisbee on last summer. And I'm really bummed about it because that was like... That was like a really cool frisbee, you know?
Aw.
Was, right? Listen to me. Speaking about it in the past tense, like my brain knows I'm never getting it back, but if I just had that military-engineered robot arm wielded to my shoulder, then I could... Nope. No, Caleb. No. Dreams? Dreams are just that. Dreams.
Yeah.
Goodbye forever, frisbee. You will be missed. Again. The first time you were missed, it was my friend Timmy who couldn't catch shit, and then you ended up on a goddamn rooftop. Breathe, Caleb.
Caleb, breathe. Easy, bud. Easy. Look, this is more just the fact that it's a frisbee's fault. Frisbees, they aren't meant to be thrown around to people. You just throw them, and then they go into the woods forever and go away. It's fine. They're not meant to come back.
It wasn't even a name brand frisbee. It was just a flying disc.
Oh, God, that is sad about it. That is sad.
Is this podcast over yet? I'm pretty hung up about this.
We are just getting started.
All right. Take two. If you recall from our previous episodes, like the one we did for Blaster Master, which Trav kept calling Master Blaster.
What?
I'm going to say it was him that did that. And Ninja Gaiden.
Gaiden?
You'll recall how we leveraged the writing of FX9 from the unfortunately short-lived, but sometimes great, Worlds of Power children's novel series endorsed by Nintendo themselves. Nintendo.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah.
Now today, we'll be doing much the same with Bionic Commando. We'll be using FX9 for most of our narrative today, and we'll fill in the rest with in-game facts and goof-em-ups.
Yes, and for some cold, hard facts off the top, Bionic Commando is an NES platformer developed and published in 1988 by Capcom. And in Japan, Bionic Commando is known as, you ready for this, Hitler's Resurrection, Top Secret. And yes, if that were something to be done, resurrecting Hitler, then we agree that keeping it top secret would be best, but not resurrecting him at all would be way better. Leave Hitler where he is, I always say. But Hitler did famously kill himself, so perhaps resurrecting him would be the thing he wanted the least. Huh? You ever think of that?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. You've convinced me on this idea of yours to resurrect Hitler. Good idea.
Wait,
Travis.
No,
your
not,
idea.
I'm just saying, no.
So in the NES Bionic Commando, you take control of Lad, a soldier who looks like Fred from the movie Drop Dead Fred, with a grappling hook gun for an arm, who has to help put a stop to this uprising of Nazis. Now, if you don't remember a whole lot of Nazis in the Bionic Commando version you grew up playing, then you weren't raised in Japan.
Yeah, yeah. And if, because of what Caleb just said, you only now realized you weren't raised in Japan... It's really incredible you made it this far without otherwise learning such. That's crazy to me, but congrats.
Your parents are awesome.
Yeah.
Upon localization to North America and Europe, all references to Nazis were removed in favor of a more ambiguous villainous entity. In the English version, the bad guys are known as the Bads. B-A-D-D-S. That's right. Two Ds for no goddamn reason. The Bads. And even the manual kind of fumbles and calls them the Naz, spelled N-A-Z-Z, which is almost kind of like Nazi, but not quite. Not Nazi quite.
That's pretty good. This was the days before, like, you could control F something and fix it. So I guess fixing that error throughout the manual was probably tougher back then. I'm trying to cut them slack.
I don't know. I think it was you have a certain ethos about you. I'm not going to remember the exact sort of pamphlet that you gave me to try to indoctrinate me into your certain beliefs, but I do remember specifically you said you can't spell Nazi without I. I think that's exactly what you said. And so maybe they just read your pamphlet. I don't know. Is that it? You think?
I was literally just trying to teach you how to spell. Okay, that's all I was doing. You kept putting a Y
you
on the end of
different
it.
Word.
I was like, don't put a Y on the end of it.
That makes it sound snazzy, like it's like jazz hand Nazis. Nazi.
There's nothing fun about Nazis.
No. I like to pretend that like the Japanese like localizers though, like when they passed the Japanese version over to the English localizers, or the Japanese developers and they passed over to the English localizers, they actually tried to get away with it, you know, like the Japanese developers are like, hi, I'm Ryu, the Japanese developer. That's not Hitler. That doesn't say Hitler at all. It's crazy. Actually what that translates to is Randolph Titler. And that's the guy who was not famous for a you know one-armed salute. No. He was famous for flattening his hand and angling it just so that his arm could allow village children to ramp Hot Wheels cars off of it and do wicked awesome flips off of his hand. So it's a rookie mistake. You're probably a rookie localizer, right? This happens a lot. So Randolph Titler is who that is.
Titler. He sounds fun.
How do you like my Japanese accent? Is that good?
Nailed it.
Thank you. Again, now we want to be clear here. We think Hitler is best left dead and not resurrected, but Capcom felt that they must at least try to incorporate history's most dastardly villain into a video game meant for children. Capcom, you crazies. Mm. And of course, due to the more strict stance against Nazi imagery and Nazi references in Europe and the West, Hitler himself is not in the English version of the game. He was renamed, not to Randolph Titler, something way better. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
He was renamed Master D. Master D.
Wow.
Which I realize actually right now, seeing it spelled out on a screen in front of me with sans serif font and a capital D and a capital M, looks almost like the emoticon version of a giant D. Did you see it?
I do. Yep.
He was renamed Master D, which to me sounds like the name of a fresh new hip hop artist circa 1988, more so than a Hitler replacement. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, Trav has prepared a skit in which he plays Hitler as a rapper.
What?
Take it away, Trav.
I did what?
Yep. Yeah, you agreed to
Yo,
this.
Yo, when I Do say it. Hit, you say la. Hit. Hit. What are you people doing? Say goddamn la already. This is no fun.
It was a short-lived career as a hip-hop artist, I must say.
Yeah, he didn't even make it through the first verse. Just got mad and left. No one wanted to play along.
That sounds very Hitler. Yeah. We mention all of these localization bits because in the spirit of getting at the originally intended story, we're going to be putting Hitler back in the bad guy role for our narrative today. Why, you may ask?
Well, for one, I think Master D sounds like a failed McDonald's mascot, and we already broke the seal on Hitler with the Japanese version, so we might as well bring him back because we get to kill him again in the end. Killing Hitler is fun. Ask Wolfenstein.
Absolutely agree, except Wolfenstein is not a man. Huh. But that's all right. That's all right. Hmm. Also, spoiler alert for anyone listening or who hasn't played the Japanese version of the game. We're going to be killing Hitler in this episode. Not like really killing him, but, you know, like storaphorically. Is that how you say it? Metaphorically, but in a...
I like it. I like it a lot.
Don't encourage me, Travis. Okay, so now we're going to recap. In the video game, you play as Lad, okay, who seeks to stop a group of baddies named the Naz and their resurrected Hitler leader. FX9, the author of the Worlds of Power book on Bionic Commando we're pulling from today, also blended some of the localization details into his book. For example, the Naz are a separate terrorist organization. Instead of Hitler, he uses the name KILT. K-I-L-T. KILT's Federation Army are called the BAD, B-A-D-D, bad. And the main character of Lad was renamed as Jack Markson, which I promise throughout this episode, I will accidentally refer to him as Mark Jackson. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, of course.
Also, FX9 uses the name Master D, who again was the Hitler replacement in the English games. And he uses him as an evil scientist in this book.
Man, I feel like people aren't confused enough. So again, real quick, Jack is our main protagonist, good guy, hero. Let's go, Jack. The Nas, or the Naz, whichever, they're just bad terrorists, okay? Just bad terrorists. Okay. Hitler is right. Just bad, okay? Hitler's army is okay. B-A-double-D bad. And just easy way to remember this, just remember Nazis are bad, and bad are Nazis. Hmm?
Huh.
And Master D was my nickname in high school. Also, I just want to point out our good friend Vyar, a German fella who's a great friend of ours, good friend of the Polymedia Network, he has loaned his voice, his expertise with his German tongue for one of Hitler's chaotic henchmen known as the Hand. So you will hear Vyar tonight, and you will hear his hilarious outtakes at the end of the show. Now it's up to Jack Markson or Mark Jackson or whoever to save the day. We have to kill Hitler.
Let's do it. Wait, but first.
Okay.
I do feel like I need to note FX9's opening dedication. You know, when you read a book, someone put a lot of time into this book, and they sometimes know that there's certain members of their family or certain friends that probably dealt with a lot during the production of the book, and so they want to dedicate this book to them. And so FX9's book on Bionic Commando does open with such a dedication. It reads, "Dedicated to my bionic nephews, Ted and Dan." Which sounds like a lovely uncle being a sweetheart, but I like to imagine that he kisses each of his own biceps as he says each name.
Yeah. Wait, are his nephews dead and he resurrected them as bionic robots, you think?
No. Like, those are the nicknames he gave his biceps. Oh. He's like, yeah, dedicated to my bionic nephews, Ted.
Oh, I get it.
And Dan.
I just imagined him kissing two dead boys dressed as robots, but I like your version better. That's way better. Anyway, let's kill Hitler.
You know what's weird, though, and we'll get a little bit to this later, but relatives, the spirit of relatives being imbued into the bionic arms, not so far-fetched in this Bionic Commando series, which I'll touch on later.
All right.
Yeah, it's a weird game series. Okay, so Jack Markson is taking a short reprieve from fighting against the Naz terrorists and is currently relaxing and watching the setting sun from a penthouse in Buenos Aires.
Mm.
Earlier that day, he and his Federation fighting partner, who goes by the name Super Joe, or that's his real name, we don't really know, but we're going to pretend that his mother's not that crazy. He had burst into the hiding place of the Naz terrorists and fucked them up real good.
Yeah.
Jack and Joe managed to nab every single one of the organization's leaders, but failed to secure their plans for something known as Albatross, a weapon of destruction so powerful that it could wipe out the friggin' world.
Ooh, that's a big miss. You're gonna want those plants.
Yeah. But we'll worry about that later. I mean, for now, Super Joe has returned with 4 boxes of hot pizza.
That seems like a lot of pizza for just 2 guys.
I'm not convinced they're even 2 guys, to be honest. I'm not convinced they're even human guys, because the phrase boxes of pizza is the language that the book uses and is not language that humans use.
Right.
When it says Super Joe came through the penthouse door carrying 4 boxes of hot pizza. Who says boxes of pizza? Robots pretending to be humans do that.
That's right.
Hello, fellow humans. I come bearing 4 boxes of pizza and 6 aluminum cylinders containing alcohol. Now let us party until we deplete our food guts into the porcelain waste bowl. Yeah, FX9 is the only person in the world who has obviously never ordered a pizza.
Yeah, did one of his bionic nephews write this, you think?
Like, being his arm wrote it? Like his hand? Like, that's what humans do, I guess?
I don't know.
Huh. This is getting confusing.
It is weird.
So we learned through their dinner banter that Jack and Joe have spent 10 years together on missions like this. They had dined in celebration at a Bangkok prison and in a sewer in Marsal. These guys are the real friggin' deal, and defeating the Nas earlier that day was just another day at the office. As spies for the Federation, they had learned to trust each other, and there is nothing more important in the spy game than trust.
More like stuffed trust. Pizza. Get it? They have a problem, though. The albatross. What if it falls into the wrong hands?
It never will.
What if it falls into the hands of Hitler, the biggest maniac to ever threaten the free world? Huh?
Nope.
What
not
if?
Not going to happen. All right, crazy and your crazy conspiracy theories. Let's, I guess, keep reading and see if that happens. So Jack, he ponders this idea about that possibly happening. He should have talked to me. I would have told him that's not going to happen, man. But he ponders it. Hitler and his armies, they do have secret compounds all over the world. And if they get their hands on the Albatross, they would definitely make a play for world domination. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, Joe senses danger and tells Jack to get down.
Get down!
Two bullets whiz over their heads and smash a mirror across the room. Snipers, Jack reckons. Joe agrees. They had a little discussion about it in the middle of this gunfight.
Think those are snipers? Yeah, probably. Are you sure, though? Yeah. All right, I'll agree. Cool. Hey, who do you think's behind it? Maybe Hitler?
Sure, that makes sense. I'm not sure at this point that they're necessarily aware
that he's like, been Hitler's resurrected.
Been, like, reanimated.
Yeah, it's got to be Hitler.
It's got to be.
No one else would shoot two bullets from a sniper just as we're eating four boxes of pizza. Come on, that's a Hitler move.
Anyway, Joe's like, I'll bet this little vacation of ours is over, to which they probably both agree again.
Yeah, and like I thought they were here on Naz killing an albatross getting business. This wasn't ever a vacation, Joe. What kind of vacation you taking, bud?
They take the first opportunity to sprint for better cover inside the room. They realize that Hitler's army, the bad zzzz, are probably going to breach the door soon in search of the albatross that, for the moment, they're thankful that they don't have. Mm-hmm. Jack reaches over and flicks the light switch, killing the glow of a chandelier overhead. Seconds later, the door bursts open and five of Hitler's finest ninjas enter with swastikas embroidered right on their goddamn jackets.
Wow. And I imagine them running out like a basketball team, all wearing matching warm-ups. There's like lasers
and
shit.
Do you think they have like a tearaway, yeah. A tearaway gi?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
And they just have those little like two-toed tabi boots that they're like running around playing basketball in. Oh, that could be cute.
100% imagined exactly everything you just said.
And see, our boys are, for some reason, like really, really scared of the shurikens that these ninjas are wielding. The text tells us, quote, that the sharpened steel throwing star could kill a man in an instant. Hey, Joe and Mark Jackson, you know what else can do that? Those freaking bullets that you already dodged. I think you're cool, guys.
Seriously.
I think you're cool. It's like you're freaking out when you get a splinter, but like you're totally cool with AIDS that you like got on the way to the, I don't know, the Splinter AIDS party. Hmm. I don't know what kind of scene I'm painting here. Let's move on.
Yeah, Splinter AIDS party, huh? All right.
Okay. Yeah. You don't remember those?
No.
Real big in the 90s and then real not big in the 90s. So Jack takes aim with his pistol and fires at the cord of the chandelier, causing it to fall down and smash all five ninjas.
Wow.
Because ninjas travel in groups.
Yeah.
Typical ninja behavior.
Yep.
And it sends their shuriken sliding across the floor. Joe says, it's Hitler's guys, all right.
Nothing says Hitler's
definitely.
Yeah, nothing says Hitler's guys to me louder and more clearly than five ninjas brandishing shurikens. Though I will say the embroidered swastikas do amplify it quite a bit, which is really the only evidence
sure.
they had. Right? They couldn't have thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just the embroidered swastika.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure these guys are actual ninjas. I think Hitler was on a budget. And he's like, all right, what are we going to get, ninjas? Ah, my uncle and his three friends, like, have costumes. Because I can't imagine ninjas being like, hey, fellow ninja, you know what would make us really blend in with our surroundings, okay? You know the things ninjas are most famous for, you know? Extremely recognizable embroidery. And if it's, like, flashy and the light reflects off of it, that would be so cool. We would be, like, real ninjas, right, fellow ninja?
Yeah, man, they just needed to... They just needed to look up who Hitler was, I guess.
Or what ninjas were, even. That one might
yes.
have been a step one.
Two Googles away from this not being an issue.
then after those five, that group of very close group of five ninjas gets flattened by one gigantic chandelier, then five more Hitler ninjas
wow.
jump into the room, this time carrying swords. So they were waiting patiently for their ninja friends to get murdered first before they're like, more guys, let's do it. So... But the thing here is, though, Jack, for all his craziness, for all his wackiness, he has a code of honor. He does. And it prevents him from firing first on an enemy that doesn't have a gun, right? So he
right.
searches the room for a different weapon. It is apparently, though, within his code of honor, if a chandelier plays the middleman. But luckily, Jack finds a ninja sword hanging on the wall of the penthouse, and he plans to use it, goddammit.
And that's a good point.
And I appreciate this. You know, this was in a time before Airbnb, but I do check the pics of every Airbnb I stay in for swords on the walls. I'll pay extra for weapons scattered around the premises. You just never know, Caleb.
I put tiny little shurikens in between couch cushions. People think they're pennies because that's a pretty common trope.
Yeah.
Nope. Tiny shuriken.
Wow. That's wow.
Smart. Don't tell anyone I said that.
Okay.
Joe and Jack, they manage to subdue the ninjas only for like 10 more to enter the room.
Wow.
They're waiting. You know, the door's probably just narrow and only five can get through at a time.
It's probably.
And then the door's on a spring latch or something like that.
It could be an elevator issue. Maybe they're still coming up. Maybe it's still coming up. But we got 10 more entering the room. We got two more basketball teams full of ninjas showing up here.
God, I want to watch that game. So now they're cornered, and another figure darkens the doorway, which was already darkened thanks to the chandelier being destroyed earlier.
Right.
So we're not like really sure how anyone could see anything at this point. But all that aside, oh shit, it's Hitler.
Capture him alive!
Nazi ninjas rush in and subdue Jack. Meanwhile, Joe is crawling across the floor, trying to form a plan.
Give yourself up, Jack Moxon. There's no way out this time. We are going to take you as our hostages. If the Federation tries to stop our plans, you will die.
But only if that happens, right? Otherwise, I'm living? Is that what you're saying?
Don't ask me questions. I didn't map out all of the words I could respond with a German accent.
For you listening, he really did use phonetical spelling to make sure he got it right. Thinking fast, Jack hurls himself toward the large windows inside the penthouse, crashes through them, and plummets 20 floors down, leaving Joe behind with the ninjas.
Man, poor Joe. He's got to be a little bummed to be restrained by a bunch of Nazi ninjas and then just watch his friend go berserk and commit suicide right in front of him, right? That's tough. That is tough. Where are you going? No. Poor bastard.
Good news, Joe. Jack, he wakes up in a hospital. Now, he's confused, of course.
Yeah.
He does say, and I quote, "Hey, wait a minute. Didn't I just try to commit suicide? I'm pretty sure I did, right? Right, children reading this book?" Just kidding. He didn't say that. He should have, though. But he does ask a nurse what happened to him. Last he remembers, he fell 20 floors and doesn't recall how that ended. She tells him he landed in the hotel swimming pool, and thankfully, the deep end.
Ah.
Then Jack remembers that was his plan all along. Good thing it had worked, right?
Yeah, no joke.
Yeah. I remember now. I was trying to commit, like, just some suicide. Okay. I totally get it now, man. It's cool. I think I landed on my Jack voice, by the way.
There it is.
Cool, man. Okay. Got it.
It's good.
Thank you. Jack then asks about Joe. "Hey, nurse lady, is Joe okay?" But the nurse, she doesn't answer him. The doctor arrives and tells Jack that he was flown to a top secret hospital in Maryland.
Oh, wow. Maryland?
Yeah, Maryland. Beautiful place. Now, I get the sense that this doctor is very, very proud of his state because he really quite quickly reveals that it's home to a secret military base.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says, this is a literal quote from the book. He says, "You are in a top secret army hospital." Then, of course, I'm sure Jack, he probably thinks, "I better just give up on any thoughts of discovering where this is. I mean, what with this hospital being so top secret."
Right.
But before Jack can even move on, the doc at the very fucking same sentence blurts out, "In Maryland." Oh, cool. Thanks, doc. That's good to know, I guess.
Also, dead giveaway too, the doctor was a crab, you know, something Maryland is known for. So that helped.
Huh. Next, Jack's captain arrives and jokes about how he didn't realize Jack had taken up swimming.
Yeah, now's a great time for jokes, Captain. And honestly, these jokes are a little on the nose. Like, "Hey, Jack, I heard you like failing at suicide and leaving your friends to die." Nah, buddy, how you been? Doing all right?
Jack tells the captain that he's worried about Super Joe. He had left him with Hitler back up in the penthouse. Yeah.
Man, that's a sentence not a lot of people really get to say anymore. "Hey, I left my bud with Hitler in the penthouse." Like, what? Is Hitler? Did you name my dog Hitler, you fucking creep?
That's better than the alternative. He resurrected Hitler and he's back in the penthouse.
That's true. That's like, it better be Actually, it better be resurrected Hitler. How dare you name an animal Hitler?
That's true. Because when the dog runs away, you're going to have to be standing on your back porch in the neighborhood yelling, Hitler!
Yeah, I wouldn't want to check that dog in to like get boarded or anything.
Here, Hitler, Hitler, Hitler. Oh, that's hard to say. See, that's what that's hard to say. You got to have a dog's name that you can say repeatedly, and you can't do it with Hitler.
That's
the
true.
Only reason not to do it. So the captain tells him that Joe is in fact still alive and is being held hostage by Hitler's army somewhere in the Pacific. That's it, man, Jack says. I'm going there as soon as I get out of this bed, man. I'm serious. Jack then tries to stir out of bed, but realizes something is different about one of his arms. Upon further inspection, he realizes it's missing. Yeah, well, his original arm is missing. He has a plastic mold of another arm in its place now.
Wow. And then here Jack yells at the captain. He's like, what'd you do to me? Where's my arm? And it's like, dude, I didn't throw you out of a 20-story window. You did that to you. What did you do to your own arm?
If you're going to be mad at anybody, be mad at the floor. I mean, Jesus. If that wasn't there, you'd be fine still. So it turns out that Jack's new arm is, you guessed it, bionic, making Jack the first bionic commando.
Hey, you said the thing.
Well, don't get too excited. The arm is made of plastic.
Not metal? What?
Yeah, not even a little bit. I just hope it doesn't have one of those like plastic recycling symbols on it, because mm-hmm. that just really doesn't instill confidence. But can you imagine the doctor telling him, like, I know this is all shocking for you, but keep in mind, if you get injured in the field, you can like hobble yourself to the nearest green bin, you know, but make sure it accepts number 7 plastic. If it does not, keep hobbling, okay? We have one Earth, okay? It's important.
Yeah. Oh, and this is not BPA free. It's mostly BPA, whatever that is. So don't put it in the dishwasher.
But how did his other arm even get removed, you might ask? Well, the doctor has a theory.
We think you were wounded by a shuriken,
is what he says with a straight face. while old Jack Markson, or Mark Jackson, Jack Markson, right, thank you, was thinking, mm-hmm. What, like a shuriken made of fucking chainsaws and fish knives, man? Like, have you seen a throwing star, doctor? They're not like dismembering tools.
Seriously.
I mean, the most damage they can do is emotional damage. You know, when a girl visits her boyfriend's apartment for the first time and sees throwing stars hanging on the wall, you know, but the girl's self-image is so poor that she feels this mouth-breathing nerd is the best she can do. So, you know, she just deals with it for the rest of her life. Martha.
Ooh. Wow. Caleb, buddy, you got to let it go. She wasn't right for you, you know?
Moments ago, Jack thought his time as a spy and commando was over, but now he realizes that maybe it wasn't after all. Curiously, Jack touches the arm and accidentally presses the thumb against the palm. At this moment, a grappling hook shoots out from the plastic hand and clamps into the ceiling above him.
Mm-hmm. I know what he's thinking. He's like, okay, everyone, leave for a second. Wait, actually, Doc, one thing. Can I masturbate with this thing?
I would not recommend that, Jack.
Okay, never mind. Everybody can come back in. Come on back in. Sorry about that.
Everybody can come except for me, apparently. God, Doc, you sick. The 2009, this is where I pick up on the little tidbit I offered earlier. The 2009 Bionic Commando sequel alludes to the bionic arm actually containing the essence of Jack's deceased wife. So it might not actually even be masturbation. Doc,
wow.
You think about that one? Doctor?
Wow, that is a question I never thought I'd have to answer. I'm going to answer, though. I'm going to say no. Hey, you know, because you mentioned something kind of ghostly there, that does make this episode perfect for an October release. You know, I was kind of worried people would get mad. We didn't do Silent Hill or finish up that Resident Evil, but Ghost Wife and a fake wanking hand pretty much bridges the gap.
We did it! Yay! But on to this non-spooky game. The captain tells Jack that the hook should be good for getting him out of some tough situations. It has a whole lot of little doodads and trinkets. So the arm has a scrambler for electronic fields. That could come in handy. The index finger can be heated up to 1,000 degrees Celsius. That's pretty good. And it's so strong that it can punch with the force of 10 men and throw objects with great plus or minus good. Accuracy and speed, whatever grace means, great means, I don't know. The fingers of the arm are ultra sensitive, so they can open safes and disarm bombs.
Wow.
And I'm not done yet. Travis,
oh, sorry.
Shut up.
I'm so sorry.
And it comes with an electromagnetic field, so at the press of a button and a point, the enemy will be compelled to tell the truth. You know, electromagnetic field stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know that was part of that. I haven't read into it, but it's crazy. But, you know, after hearing like a thousand degrees Celsius.
That's a lot, right? I'm not a temperature man, but that's a lot, right?
Yeah, I guess pretty hot. So after all of that heat, is it just me or does the punch power of just 10 men feel pretty low? Like, we make cars that are like over 400 horsepower. We can't put more than 10 man fists into this fucking thing?
Hey, cut him some slack. You might not be impressed by 10 people, Trav, okay? But Jack, he's way impressed, okay? So Doc, whoa. Slow down there, man. Slow down. So you're telling me, Mark Jackson, or Jack Markson, you're telling me that this arm right here that I have has the power to clear out an entire queue for a Lyndon Ashby autograph at a medium-sized Midwestern video game convention? Wait. Let me get this straight, Doc, okay? You're saying that this single bionic arm could destroy the entire world's population of parents who admit that their child is an Olympic ribbon dancer? Hold on for a second there, Doc, okay? You're telling me that this arm, with this single arm, I could wipe out the entire crowd at a Caleb J. Ross book reading? Whoa, dude.
Oh.
Whoa.
Whoa. Oh, that one got sad. Oh,
It did. That's twice the size of any crowd.
He could kill him five times over, though. That's the impressive thing. But the doctor's like, yes, Jack. But think about it. Think about this. Although I told you not to do it, but think about it. Just think about it, because you don't want to do it. But listen, it has the jerk-off power of 10 men, which is honestly, Jack, stop, considerably more dangerous than punching. If you can get an enemy to hold still long enough to jerk him clean, he'll bleed out in under 7 minutes, Jack.
But like, just be on the same page here. You like told me not to do that
to yourself,
okay, to myself. But yeah. Other people
jerk them right
like,
off.
Is there a sensor that lets it know that like I'm jerking off someone else, or how does that work?
Nope, it'll kill whoever you jerk off.
But I could still do it to myself, is what you're saying. Like, I could, though.
It'll hurt. Then you could come back and we'd give you a bionic penis. I mean, nothing's impossible.
We have the technology, man. That's cool. And immediately after providing Jack with the very briefest of overviews on this incredibly important and expensive arm, the doctor has the gall to say, "Now, Federation scientists will give you a special briefing on the arm in the next few days." Mm. Yeah, the next few days. This bitch almost decapitated a doctor within 5 minutes of waking up. You know this guy is going to try jerking off soon, even though we told him not to several times.
He's going to try it.
So you're okay with chalking up the inevitable decapitation of a passing nurse and a shredded Playboy magazine as just acceptable collateral damage because the Federation scientists are busy with, I don't know, like expense forms and planning Gordon Freeman's birthday party or something?
Surprise, Gordon! Happy birthday!
Oh my God. You guys, this is so cool. Like, literally just this morning, like this very morning of the day that we are talking to each other, which is a surprise since you've avoided me for so long. On this very day, I thought today's going to be the day that maybe I just stopped talking because I got the sense that like everybody in this whole office didn't like me. So I was not another word. You were not going to hear me.
Oh, no.
You were not going to hear me breathe. I was not going to speak. I was going to stay to myself, and I was going to get through that whole list of to-dos that you guys have been asking me to do for like several years. I was going to do them today, but then I walk in, and there's so much love. Wow. You guys do love me. This is great. Hey, let's have a talking contest. I'll go first. My name is Gordon Freeman.
Everyone just single file starts jumping out of a window.
Let's use this window that Jack Marston already used.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy that our office is in this penthouse. Well, that's weird, right?
It is true. Although yeah, I will say weird. This, if the doctor told me I couldn't jerk off with that fancy arm, I would at least try to truth finger myself. Just to see what it was like. Just to see if I could purge the lies.
I literally thought, this is a shame on me for thinking this. I thought you were going to say I would try using the other hand. But
no.
I'm the idiot here. I'm sorry. That was my fault. How long have we been doing this podcast night? And I thought that's where you were going with it. That was my fault. My fault. So Jack, he's still coming to terms with this whole situation, right? And he feels just this sudden jolt of rage, you know, and he points at the captain and he asks, "Hey, Captain Man, wait, will this arm like make you tell the truth too?"
"Yes, Jack."
"I hadn't even pointed at you yet. Why did you tell the truth just then? Why didn't you say no? And then I wouldn't have carried on this line of thinking, but since you said yes, okay, well, here I go. I'm pointing it at you now. Answer this question. What are Super Joe's like chances of living?"
"Not good. He will only survive if your mission is successful."
"Oh, that's not good news. So like, what are my chances of surviving the mission?"
"Slim. It's a suicide mission. Also, I would have told you that anyway without your magic electro pointy thingy, because you're seriously fucked."
"Oh man, that's a bummer. So like, one more question though before we move on, and I understand it's, you know, probably not worth asking about, given that you literally just told me that I'm not going to live past today. But like, this arm though, like, can I masturbate with it?"
The doctor told me to tell you no. He also warned me you would ask. I'm supposed to tell you no.
But check this out. Check this out, Captain, old Capitan, Capman. It can jerk off other people. You know anybody in need of a good off jerking? Huh? No?
There's a whole platoon of men.
Oh man. All right. Is that like more than 10?
Yeah.
Oh God. There's gonna be some very disappointed people for several minutes. But they'll come around.
Oh, they will.
Around everything. It's going to be filthy in there. So Jack, he does some training on using the arms for the next 4 weeks while Joe just rots away in the middle of the ocean with Hitler. All right. But right before the mission is set to begin, the captain tells Jack that he can still back out. And to be honest with you listeners, I don't think he can. I don't think that's a real choice. I mean, he has a lethal bionic arm. And it's been 4 weeks since they last heard from Joe. They should probably get going on this.
Yeah. The only good news, really, is after 4 weeks, Joe is still constipated from all that pizza. I don't even know why that's good news. But but maybe it's keeping him alive somehow.
Well, he and Barry from Resident Evil are good friends. And he saw Barry take a dump in a gun once and was like, "Ugh, I don't want to do that." So he's just always full of cheese now. Just stuffs himself full of cheese. Both holes. He'll eat 4 boxes of pizza and then cram up 2 or 3 more slices up the hole just to be on the safe side. It's proved him well. He's alive now, isn't he? After all these missions. So
you can't argue that you're right.
Can't argue with that. So either way, you know, Jack, he's ready to get going. The captain then spreads out a detailed map that shows the different hideout locations of Hitler's top secret Pacific base, which seems way less secret considering the level of detail indicated on this very map.
"Okay, Jack, we have a full 3D simulation of Hitler's base and a live video feed of every move he makes. It's actually being broadcast live right now on C-SPAN. This is top secret stuff."
"Is that a microphone you have on your lapel right now, man?"
"In fact, it is."
"All right,
secret.
Cool. Just making
top
sure.
Top secret microphone."
Can I do one thing? I've always wanted to do this. I'm going to lean in real close, okay? Lean in real close to your chest there.
Okay.
"Hello, Cleveland."
Oh, God.
Did I do it right? Did I do it? I hope Cleveland was listening because they're going to get it. They're going to be like, "I get it."
"Sorry about that, HQ. I couldn't control him."
"Hi, HQ, man." "I'm here. I'm here with Captain. We're hanging out, man. This is cool." The captain shows Jack where he will parachute in, and warns him of heavily guarded zones and shows him some neutral zones. It's good. It's good. It's good that the captain also showed him those. And that's also where the captain's that captain's going to fire him into. Wait, damn it. Okay.
I like that. That's where he's going. Yeah, that's great. He's going to fire him right into the neutral cannon.
from the helicopter, he's going to fire him out of a cannon into the neutral zone. You know what? That's not the way it's written, but that makes sense. All right. So the captain stresses this point several times, the point being actually, hey, don't open fire in these neutral zones. That's mm-hmm. what I was supposed to say earlier. So the captain stresses this several times, and so it seems pretty important.
It does.
Now they part ways, but before either gets far, the captain, I like to imagine they're walking, you know, back away from each other 10 steps back to back, and the captain turns and flips his long hair around and says,
"Hey, Jack."
"Yes, sir?"
"Take good care of that arm. You're replaceable. It's not."
Okay, man. I mean, that is weird. That's a weird thing for the captain to say.
It was an actual line in the book. We fluff a little bit, but that was an actual thing where he's like, "Hey, son, go out there and get him. By the way, take good care of that arm. Fuck you specifically. But the arm better come back. That's a lot of money and research we put into that thing, okay?"
My favorite part about it is if we honor our earlier make 'em up about the arm being recyclable, Jack's life is even less like of interest because he's already told him. It's literally stamped to say, actually, that arm is very replaceable, but it's still cool if you die, though, Jack.
Still cool.
So the next day, Jack is flown to the Pacific. He's transferred to his own small helicopter and he flies toward Hitler's base. He sets the helicopter to auto hover so that it will be waiting for him when he gets back.
Yeah, that's fucking dumb, right? We can all agree. Just leave a helicopter in the air while you're not in it, unmanned, and then just hope you come back to it later. Like it's a dog chained in the air. But I know I truly admire Jack's strategy of never letting the helicopter touch the ground, because if it doesn't touch the ground, then it can't crash, right? Hmm?
You know, I think semantically you are right. I mean, until a helicopter actually hits the ground, it actually hasn't crashed. It's just perpetually on its way to crashing.
Huh. That's right.
Good point. Good point. So then Jack Marston Jack, he checks his ammo. Then he checks his parachute. And he looks at his arm and he says, "We're in this together, buddy. You take care of me and I'll take care of you."
And yeah, and then his arm was all like, "Hey, I'd love to, Jack. You off?" But not really. The arm can't talk. That was just for fun.
And then Jack, he jumps from the chopper and drifts toward the base. Mm. Jack touches down to an eerie silence. His first mission is to reach the communications tower and tap in. After burying his parachute, he hears gunfire and 10 enemy soldiers sprint toward him. Using his hook, he latches himself to the second story of the communications building and races for the top floor. The enemies below are baffled as to where Jack has disappeared to. What to do now? Well, thankfully, Jack's comm buddy from MA1 has his back. He says,
"Remember to eavesdrop on the enemy. You will learn valuable information. Use it to plan your strategy for evading them."
Which is pretty good advice, you know, but I feel like it probably could have been worded better and maybe a little bit more arrogantly.
Before you go on being a spy, remember to do spy stuff, because spying, as you probably don't know, what with you being a spy, is what spies do.
But, I mean, how can Jack eavesdrop? It's not like his communicator has a setting called eavesdrop, right?
No, it totally does. It totally fucking does. I'm not kidding at all. Which really kind of means that I wouldn't be surprised if other suspiciously relevant functions exist. Like, let's see, man. Okay. They only put me through 4 days of training, and mostly I was just asking if I could jerk off with it, and they were telling me no. That took up, you know, 5 or 6 hours of most days. So let me do a little field testing here. What buttons do we have? We got eavesdropping. That one seems situationally appropriate. Okay. Here's one called Don't Get Kill Mode. Huh. I might be using that one a lot later. That sounds pretty good. Oh, wait, here's one. Here's a button that says Rescue Super Joe. Oh, it's fucking out of order, man. Oh shit.
Boo. Oh, well.
I'll just click on the Don't Get Killed Mode. I mean, that should theoretically take care of it. I mean, eventually, like, I'll use that one.
All that government spending and we already the most important button's out of order. God damn.
It didn't come. What's weird, though, is it became out of order on its previous mission when the guy was sent out to rescue a dude named Philip. And he just kept pressing that button. He's like, why isn't this working? Like, I assume Super Joe is just a stand-in name. Nope, it was specifically for Super... Although, that time period, the best time period in Super Joe's life, he was doing all sorts of crazy tricks on skateboards and stuff, never dying, didn't know why. Little did he know. Guy in the jungle pressing the rescue Super Joe button all... Yeah, it was good. That was a long walk. I don't regret it. I don't regret it, Travis.
No, I'm keeping it in.
Inside the communications room, Jack taps the line and gets further instructions from his base. He's also able to use eavesdrop mode to pick up on some of Hitler's men, and so he takes time to soak in some intel.
Here is some intel for you. First, place the pork chops between two sheets of plastic wrap and pound them until they are 6.35 millimeters thick with the flat side of the meat tenderizer. Lightly season both sides with salt and freshly ground black pepper.
So Jack leaves.
Then place a flour mixture, egg, and crumbs in three separate shallow bowls and dip the chops into the flour combination, coating both sides. Fry immediately!
Jack leaves the communications tower and makes his way inside a neighboring building and attempts to sneak down the elevator shaft, but falls instead. Oops.
Womp womp.
Yeah, and he experiences a flashback to his fall in Buenos Aires into the pool, and then, worse, realizes in a panic he's momentarily forgotten how to work his grappling hook. Oh, golly gee. But at the last second, the arm shoots out, grabs the edge of a beam, and saves Jack from certain death.
Shooey! Bout schnitzeled. That was close.
Yeah, and that's what counts as a cliffhanger in this book. Every chapter ends with some version of, oh no! With the next chapter opening with some version of, never mind.
Ah, the old R.L. Stein. Very familiar with that.
Over the radio, the Federation contacts Jack to let him know that the enemies know he's in the building and that he needs to run. And so he does, wiping out baddies with his grappling hook as he goes. Eventually, he ends up in a well-lit room with high vaulted ceilings that at first appear safe, but then iron bars drop around Jack, caging him like a wild animal. The bars are too strong, even for his bionic arm. Then a voice comes over the loudspeaker.
Welcome to my empire, Jack Markson. You very fool to come here. Your friend Joe knows how strong the bars of our cages are. Now you two will die together.
Remember that line about the bars for later, okay? It's important, listener. So Jack, he calls Hitler a sicko, and Hitler triggers the bars to start closing in on Jack.
Feeling claustrophobic yet, Markson?
Jack decides against using his hot finger to melt the steel beams. You know, he wants to avoid getting all mixed up in a 9/11 conspiracy. I get it. And instead, he chooses to use his bionic arm to hook something above him and lift himself out of harm's way. So he does just that. And just in time.
Find him, you idiots!
Jack was nowhere to be found. He had grappled up into a duct system and was already crawling away before finding himself outside and in an alleyway. Now on his feet, he sprints between two of the communications buildings and eventually reaches a dead end. This could become a literal dead end if Jack doesn't think of something quick. A red brick wall lies ahead, towering five stories high. His bionic arm will not help him here, and Hitler's men are approaching fast. Luckily, after some searching, he finds a switch on the wall that triggers a hidden door. He slips through to the other side, but not before a few of Hitler's bad army gets some shots off, striking Jack in his leg.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Jack, he's been hurt a lot worse than this in other missions. FX9 writes of once in Kenya, he'd got four bullets at the same time that were originally meant for an elephant. begging into question the circumstances of his near-death experience and the kinds of missions Jack has been on.
Wow. I am like a general to his men. Gentlemen, the elephant there in the yonder distance is suspected of high treason. Extremist terrorism, and we're pretty sure it's a socialist. On my count, you will aim toward and shoot this elephant.
And meanwhile, 200 yards away, dressed in safari camo and crawling across the Sahara plains on his stomach, Jack, he's like, Oh, man, I've been crawling in this desert wasteland for a long time, and I'm so dangerously low on water.
Three?
Oh, wait, elephants drink water. Maybe I'll just, like, hop on this elephant and ride it to the nearest water source. Oh, my God, I'm such a genius, man.
One, fire!
Ow! Ooh! E! Wait, is that one, two, three? Gah! Four! Oh, man, now I'm thirsty and riddled with bullets. What a day.
Ah, poor Jack. But you know what? Then the elephant explodes from a suicide bomb, so technically he was saved by being shot. Worked out. Don't trust an elephant. That's the moral of that story Caleb and I just wrote for you.
So that crazy general wasn't so crazy. He had some good intel on this elephant. So Jack, he escapes his would-be captors and gets to the roof of a nearby building, signaling his helicopter to come rescue him. Hitler yells out over the loudspeaker to his bad army.
The spies are on the rooftop. If you let them escape, you will be punished.
You know, I just realized something. Probably should have brought it up earlier. Helicopters are neither silent nor small, so isn't auto hover mode of a helicopter just like another term for intruder horn?
I can think of a lot of worse things to refer to as an intruder horn. I won't get into it here, but you can imagine.
Okay, well, that's going to be Tails late night. I want to hear it. Using his grappling hook, Jack clings to the helicopter's landing rudders and pulls himself toward the open door just as the hatch on the roof opens, spewing forth tons of bad soldiers who promptly drop to one knee and take aim up toward the dangling Jack. That's a nickname for my own dangling Jack, who is an open target clinging for life right in front of them. He'll never be able to shimmy up inside the helicopter in time.
Let him escape. Shoot to kill.
Then he breaks into AC/DC, shoot to thrill.
Shoot to thrill. Play to kill. Too many men with too many pills. Hell. Shoot to thrill. Play to kill.
Wouldn't that be something?
Who inspired not... whom?
Huh? Who inspired who? I think that's an AC/DC song.
Who inspired whom? Who inspired whom?
I think so. I think it's who made who, but goddamn, I just couldn't pass up the opportunity.
I like how you took, you have such a rich knowledge of AC/DC music that you took my Who Inspired Whom as a play on one of their song names. I'm legitimately asking, did Hitler inspire the band or was the band like this Hitler guy's got it going?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I would. And I'm glad you won't, even if you could tell me. Yeah. Keep it to yourself, please. Fortunately, Jack's chopper is equipped with a remote speed lift function. So at the press of a button, one of the 48 on his arm, apparently, whoosh, the chopper and the dangling Jack lift high into the sky, far enough away for bullets to reach, I guess. Well, yes, because within seconds, Jack is 2,000 feet above the ground, and after realizing he is safe from bullets, apparently, suddenly he becomes humbled by the height and is now dangling freely. Oh. Finally, he swings himself up and inside to the pilot's seat. Mission one accomplished.
That wasn't so...
Don't do it.
B-A-D-D. Bad. That wasn't so bad.
Boo. In a moment of serious reflection... Wait. Pause. This book hasn't been just full of moments of serious reflection. I've been seriously reflecting on my life the whole time.
So good.
Yeah. So word. Yep. In a moment of serious reflection, Jack stares at his new arm, realizing that his life would have been over about 30 seconds into that mission had it not been... for his shiny new bionic appendage. He misses his old arm and wishes he could have both. And now, after experiencing life and near death with his bionic arm, he wonders what he would choose now if given the choice between it and his original biological arm. He's not sure what he would do now. My guess is that his choice will be very influenced by the condition of his biological arm. I mean, if it's still just a shuriken shredded arm with no hope of being reattached, I'd hope our boy Jack isn't spending too much time on this decision.
Fair. That's fair. That is fair.
Looking at the map the captain had given him, Jack ponders where to go next. He decides to head toward a neutral village called San Gennaro. As he did before, he sets the chopper to auto hover and bails out, landing in a small forest of orange trees outside the village, and then marches in wearing a disguise as to not give away his military purpose. Soon after entering the busy village, he encounters a woman who he swears could pass as Hitler's sister. She tells him that the village is a peaceful place, and if he brandishes a weapon there, he'll be killed.
Oh, that sounds so peaceful.
Hungry Jack walks. Hey, Hungry Jack, that's what they call Burger Kings in Australia. Hungry Jack walks to a pizza place advertising the best pizza in the world.
Wow.
Jack really loves his pizza, as we've learned, so he's up for that, and he walks right in.
Mm.
Once inside, he spots a familiar face, Heather Willis. She had started Federation Spy School just as he was graduating. Since then, she has climbed to a high-ranking position in the espionage department.
Mm, gotta love the espionage department. Can you imagine how many practical jokes get played on folks in the offices of the espionage department? Goodness gracious.
The joke is, there are no jokes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. That's espionage. Gotta blend in with lame school. He playfully asks her to pass the salt to let her know he recognizes her.
Of course.
Because that's a secret somewhere.
He's known for his language. Salt intake.
Yeah. It makes sense. Every time I'm at a restaurant and I ask someone to pass a salt, they give me fucking nuclear codes every single time. I'm like, I don't want any more. I've got plenty.
I'm good. I'm set. You really only need the one.
Yeah. She smiles and passes him the salt with a note cupped in her palm that reads, look for flare. I don't know why her voice is. That's my note reading voice. Look for flare bombs on the second story of the video arcade. You'll need them later.
How would she know either of those things?
She's played the game.
Ah.
Yeah. Going up to the video arcade, Jack is hustled by a kid who wants to earn money to buy a ticket to America, but Jack keeps telling him to get lost.
Mm.
The kid says his name is Tiger, so it was probably Tiger Woods.
Ah.
And therefore, we know his story ends well. So good, Jack, for saying no to this kid. But at this point in the story, we can't be so sure that it's, you know, Tiger Woods.
Right.
On the second floor, Jack spies the flare bombs, but between him and the ledge on which they sit is a pit with a spiky floor, a trap.
Wow, what a weird video arcade.
It's true. Coincidentally, a moving platform leads across the pit to the other side. Jack would need to time the swing of his bionic arm so that he'd land on this moving platform just in time and then grab the bombs. And he pulls it off, but not without issue. He nearly mistimes it and plummets to his death because he didn't calculate the timing precisely enough.
Oh,
huh?
Wow.
Now, he wouldn't make that mistake again. Now, with bombs in hand, he's ready to head back. But suddenly, he feels a bit of a chill.
Uh-oh. I bet his Buenos Aires pizza constipation just let loose. That's what I'm assuming, anyway.
If you have cold poop, I need you to go to a doctor.
I mean, you just might get the chills. You might get the,
Oh, one of those. Yeah.
We've all been there.
Within moments, we have all been there. Within moments, Jack notices the entire room he's in is quickly freezing over. What's going on?
Hmm.
Has Hitler found him and is trying to freeze him out? Jack tries to grapple himself back across, but the ceiling is also frozen. His grappling hook is just useless now. It doesn't work. Nothing. Throw it away.
Wow.
Get rid of it. Recycling bin.
Oof.
He will need to jump on the panel to cross back over to the pit. So with a run and a jump, he lands on the frozen panel, but can't stop sliding because it's covered with ice.
Oh, no.
No. Thinking fast, Jack engages his hot finger and heats the plate somehow fast enough to stop himself from sliding down into the spikes below. Yeah. He makes it back to the other side and back down to the first floor of the arcade. All of that for some bombs that a familiar face in a pizza parlor told him about.
Weird, you know? Just a weird sidestep right there. But, you know, on the way out, Jack does run into Tiger again. And Tiger begs Jack to take him back to America. He's still on that whole thing. Take me back to America. Take me back to America. And Jack is like, I'm in a hurry. Get out of here. Then Tiger begs him to play the arcade game American Commando with him, and Jack's like, sure. And so he does play it, but then he has no mercy. He just murders everything on the screen, just obliterates poor Tiger, and then just pieces out, leaving Tiger there both in not America and feeling like the loser he probably is. I mean, this is rough. I mean, Jack hates kids, which in my mind kind of subverts that like friendly American hero trope that we were exposed to back in like the 80s. I mean, this Jack is just like, he just fucking hates kids, actively hates them. It's amazing.
It's true, because he was in a big hurry, understandably so. He's got Super Joe to save and all this kind of stuff. He's in a big hurry. But then there's this option, this opportunity just magically presents itself to fuck with this kid's day. He's like, yep, I can do it. No problem. Joe will understand. Joe likes doing this too. We do it together sometimes. You sure that's the game you want to pick, son? All right, fine. Let's do it.
That's the one I'm good at, because I am, in fact, an American commando.
On to the next location. This time, a remote island about 90 minutes east by chopper. The captain had radioed Jack, letting him know this would be his next stop, but didn't give any other details as to why he was going there. Once at the island, Jack notices none of the Bad Army around. Where was Hitler? Where were his men? Was this a trap? Eventually, he finds a cave that leads down into a grotto. Now this must be it, an entrance to Hitler's underground lair. Jack bails from the chopper, leaving it hovering, and descends down. As he maneuvers through the water, holding his breath and plodding across the seafloor in search of where to go next, a giant shadow begins to loom over him, blocking out the green light that had filtered through the water around him. Suddenly, he realizes that this massive shadow has 8 large moving tentacles.
Oh no! It's Bernie Sanders' hair! Run!
Close. Close. Oh. It's an octopus. So not close.
Oh, well, no, not yeah. close.
The octopus, he goes in for a big ol' hug, and Jack just can't get away. He struggles, but the octopus holds firm, squeezing the air out of him. Finally, Jack is able to fire off his grappling hook, which cuts through a tentacle, and then grips a rock formation on the side of the cave.
Smart.
In the book, it goes way out of its way to educate the reader here. After cutting through the tentacle, the narrator tells us, quote, "One down, 7 to go." It's ham-fisted for sure. So to recap, dear reader, an octopus has 8 tentacles.
Is that right?
Also, 8 minus 1 is 7.
Ah.
Good job.
Yay.
Now, let's use the hypotenuse of our current base angle to determine how far up the mouth of the cave is.
Ooh.
Can you do that with the lessons you've learned so far?
No.
Okay, well, editors, they get rid of a lot of stuff that's important to the story.
It's fucking 4 editors. Octopus arms up, right? No? I don't know.
That depends if the octopus is hard.
I tried to, like, fit octopus and hypotenuse together and be like, hypotenpus, and that made me laugh. And then I was like, there's no point in doing that. There's no reason to do that.
There was. Look at this. You're hearing this delightful chuckle.
What's the hypotenuse on that? 7, 8?
You're telling me there's no reason for that? Desperate and still struggling against the other, how many tentacles, Travis?
7.
Yay! You did it! Jack fires again in vain, not realizing that his bionic arm had a backup grappling hook.
Whoa.
Again. He was busy. He had these 2 hooks this whole time. The captain didn't tell him, probably for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, he was busy planning Gordon Freeman's birthday party, remember? So
right, exactly. And asking repeatedly over and over and over again if he can masturbate with a hand. Took up a lot of precious time in those classes. So with the leverage gained by the tension of both hooks, Jack is able to somehow spring free of the octopus and swim to a metal door at the mouth of the cave.
Yeah, he goes through the door, and somehow there's no water in there. Now, I'm no water dynamicist, as they call them, but it feels like if you open a door underwater, some of that water will go through to the other side. No water. He just ends up in a room that's dry. There's not even a mop in the room. No one. There's never been water in there. It's wild. He just goes inside a door in an underwater cave, and no one is there to greet him either.
No one's even heard of water. Like, if there was someone there, they'd be like, water?
Where?
Water? What?
What did you just come out of?
Am
is that a
right?
door thing? I always wondered what that was doing there.
Weird. You're a witch. You went through our wall. Huh. That's weird. What's funny about this little line, and we might get to it as we do a summary toward the end of at the end of this episode, but it's very obvious that FX9 was writing this book as someone played the game, because they even call them, like, stages in the book. And I'm guessing this was one of those situations where the garbage collector got rid of the water level, and now we're in a cave level.
Yes.
Like, it's been a while since I played the game, but that's my guess.
Yep,
it's
for
so
sure.
Dumb. So Jack Markson, manages to get to a control room. Maybe he can pick up some intel on the bats? I don't know. So his radio still works, and so he receives a message from the Federation. They tell him Super Joe has been moved elsewhere in the complex, but while Jack is here, he needs to find the, quote, wide gun.
Huh.
A gun that fills the room with stun bullets. They tell him the gun will come in handy later on in his mission. But how do they know that?
Right. How do they know that? And just calling it a wide gun, It just sounds like something you can get only from an online sex store. Or it sounds like a Kiss album. Wide gun!
Yeah, it's not very descriptive. I feel like he's going to go through every dead baddie and pick up their gun and just compare it to his current gun and be like, is this wider? It looks a little wider. Okay, I guess is this the wide gun? I guess, okay, I got that. He's going to pick up a shotgun for the first time and be like, holy crap, I think I found it. This one's really wide, guys.
Girthy.
While in the control room, Jack decides to eavesdrop on the communications of his enemy. He overhears Hitler screaming at his subordinates. One subordinate, his right-hand man, fittingly named Hand, or rather The Hand, tells, which I feel is just mocking our Bionic Commando, now that I think about it, to name the bad guy The Hand. Yeah. Oh, I've got this hand. Do you not have hand? Oh, that's sad. So The Hand, he tells Hitler that he has plans for the Albatross, but that Hitler must let him kill Super Joe now. By waiting to kill Joe, they're allowing Jack Markson to catch up to them and foil their plans. Hitler scoffs, telling Hand he underestimates their power over Markson and that a quick death is too good for Super Joe. You know, this Hitler, he sounds like a real jerk and a bad strategist. Always listen to your hand, Hitler, or anyone else.
Yeah.
Outside the control room, Jack encounters a group of bad soldiers. He fires and ducks until all but one are stunned. He approaches the one remaining nervous and very young bad soldier and demands to know where the wide gun is. The soldier doesn't answer, so Jack flicks on his truth-telling device and points at the soldier, which is something he probably just should have done the first time. Yeah. Why would the soldier tell him the truth? I don't know.
What is this, a test?
And this soldier, he tells him it's located in a safe behind the door, but if he enters the incorrect code, it will explode and kill him.
Oh.
The soldier also tells Jack that he does not know the code. He's too low down on the chain. Jack knocks him out with a stun gun and goes to inspect the safe.
All right.
Upon using his sensitive lock-picking feature of his hand, he is able to feel when the lock clicks into place. Before opening the safe, it occurs to him that this could be another rigged trap. He closes his eyes and jerks open the safe door and... the wide gun.
Yeah.
He should have known because the safe was also wide. That's how he should have put two and two together there.
Yeah.
He takes it and then radios to command. They tell him he needs to rendezvous with Hitler Willis. They tell him he needs to rendezvous with Heather Willis, who has the next orders from the captain.
Wow. You know, and we suppose the captain won't give the orders over the radio for fear they could be intercepted. But by that same logic, the bads already know where Jack is because he's constantly on the radio and telling them where he is. So who knows?
Jack flies out to meet Heather at a Mexican restaurant. According to FX9, he orders nachos and cheese to start and then three orders of the Bandito combo, which is everything on the menu in a single order.
Jesus, fuck. This man never shits either, which is weird because with this diet, you'd think he'd never stop.
Oh, wait. That's what the wide gun is.
Ah. He's going to go full Barry.
It's going full Barry. Doesn't even have to aim this time. He can just poop anywhere and catch it. It's like a musket, this thing, the wide gun. But you're right. He never shits. But I guess at least now we know how the always-on and hovering chopper is fueled.
That's
one way to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
As he tries to talk to Heather, he notices she doesn't seem to have an appetite. And who does in comparison to Jack? I mean, come on. But she tells him that she's a little depressed. See, apparently, Heather and Super Joe really hit it off lately. They had plans to get married in New York City after the Buenos Aires mission. And guess what? Jack was going to be the best man.
Whoa, hey, Super Joe isn't dead. Yeah, why? You don't got to go spilling these gosh dang beans. And she better be careful because my man Jack loves beans.
Heather gives Jack the coordinates that the captain is ordering him to go to next, and Heather also slips him a communicator he is supposed to take with him. At that moment, a chair pulls up beside him. It's Tiger. Yeah, the kid. Once again, he begs Jack to take him home with him. How Tiger got here without his own helicopter is beyond comprehension, but at this point, it's probably wise to take the kid up on the offer. Tiger tells Jack he can help him out on the mission. He's been in lots of Hitler's command posts before because he used to deliver Japanese food. Apparently, Hitler's favorite sushi is raw octopus.
Oh, good. I just made some.
Jack ponders for a second and then hands Tiger a notepad. All right, smarty pants. Who's not good at video games. Do you know where these coordinates lead to? Asks Jack, referring to the ones Heather just gave him. Tiger nods. All right, and draw for me what's there, and you have a deal, which I cannot verify until I actually get there. So our deal actually isn't made until I am able to verify that. So you just have to stay here. I'm coming back, though, I promise, I swear.
Yeah, and Tiger, he draws out a map so detailed, Jack wonders if he's dealing with Marco Polo or an 8-year-old boy named after a large African cat turned pro golfer.
I'm not sure how that's how it worked.
I think
I want to know, like, why does Hitler not just have Hand or any other low-ranking goon meet Tiger, like, at the front door of the compound? It seems weird that they just, like, bring the delivery kid all the way up to meet Hitler.
That's right. That's a good point. Although I wouldn't want anyone getting their hands on my raw octopus, if you know what I mean. Actually, I don't mind people handling my raw octopus. You know, we'll talk about it later.
Do you also have 7 remaining?
I have a decent hypotenuse.
Jack parachutes into where Tiger had indicated on the map and lands not far from a giant black marble statue of Hitler. He shudders at the thought of a world controlled by the real Hitler, not the statue one. By the way, in case you were concerned there, listener. Although the world controlled by a statue of Hitler would also be frightening in its own right, I would say. Tiger told him to twist the ring on one hand of the statue to open an underground bunker. Jack does this, and it works.
Ooh.
Down he goes toward what he thinks is Hitler's secret lair.
All right.
In a communications room, Jack eavesdrops on his enemies again. Hand comes on and says to his subordinates that he's aware that Jack has infiltrated the area. But he also slips when speaking to a commander and says,
Hitler is beginning to doubt my strategies. There must be no doubts, no hesitations. At last, the word will be in my power.
Surely you mean Hitler's power, sir?
Of course. That's exactly what I meant. Hitler, the all-powerful.
Back on the move, Jack is using his bionic arm to swing up higher and higher, to ledge after ledge. Occasionally, a bad officer is patrolling the ledge, and Jack swings up and takes him out. It's unclear why Jack descended into a bunker to find Hitler and is now climbing a tower outside again. I don't know. I guess he leaves no stone unturned when searching for ruthless reanimated dictators, and I guess we're here for it.
Yeah.
But suddenly, he hears the unmistakable whirr of search helicopters circling around high overhead. Jack removes his flare bomb from his commando suit and flings it up into the air. Seconds later, he hears the impact, descent, and crashing of 4 helicopters. Boom! They just got tailed.
Tailed, bitch! Woo!
Oh, I was beginning to fear this episode. Not more.
Got it.
At the top of the tower, Jack finds a rocket gun. He calls his helicopter over, which has been waiting for him and hovering on autopilot. Before he can zip up into the cockpit, the dark night around him is erased by the glare of searchlights. The Hand's voice rings out from a loudspeaker.
Prepare to die, Markson. It's the end of the game for you.
Thinking fast, Jack spins and fires his rocket gun toward a nearby fuel tank, and then uses his grappling arm to zip himself up into the cockpit of his hovering helicopter. Unfortunately, he wasn't nearly as fast as he needed to be, sustaining severe burns on his face and arms. He'll need a doctor, and he knows exactly where to find one. He speeds off in the chopper. Looking down, he can see the fiery hell he leaves behind. Hitler wasn't at this bunker, but the Hand was. Is the Hand dead? Well, time will tell. For now, Jack needs to find Heather so she can heal him up. They were going to rendezvous in San Pedro soon enough anyway. So off he goes in that direction.
Okay.
But Jack never saw the tiny metal half-inch screw that sliced through the bottom of the chopper as another gas tank exploded on the ground in the wake of his destruction. Yeah, Jack never felt the blow as it ricocheted off the control panel and struck him in the forehead, knocking him unconscious.
Oh, Jesus.
He never heard the sound of Heather's voice as it cracked over the radio. Jack, can you hear me? Jack. And end chapter.
Wow, what an
Man,
ending.
Never, never before has there been a more dumb as shit cliffhanger. Oh, a screw came loose. this is my writer inner monologue. Okay. Oh, I got it. A screw came loose and bonked the guy in the head. Yes, bonked him real good. Ha ha ha. Fade to black. And as is normal with all of my cliffhangers, let me see, you flip the page, chapter next chapter here, starting, never mind. Thankfully, Jack had put his chopper in autopilot mode on his way to San Pedro, and because of that, he was ejected with his parachute ready to go. Also, he's thankfully directly over San Pedro, where he plummets down to the ground to be found by Heather.
Wow.
Later, Tiger reappears, eager to know if his map helped. Your map was great, Tiger, man. You must have delivered a lot of raw octopus to Hitler. just twice, said Tiger, Jack tells him. Jack tells him he'll make a great spy someday.
Yeah, man, based on that evidence alone, to become a great spy, you just have to go somewhere two times in a row without getting lost. And I'd love to hear that. I have a future.
I don't. I ain't good at directions. So Heather tells Jack he's been asleep for 20 hours.
Wow.
But she was able to heal all his burns with an ancient Chinese herbal ointment. She speaks of a time she was trapped in a bamboo fire in China years ago and had burns that covered over 60% of her body. And look at her now.
Oh, yeah.
She then breaks the news to him. If he's going to save Joe, the captain has a list of things he needs to get first, or else his chances of rescuing his pal are low. Which, come to think of it, low is better than you're definitely going to die, which is what he heard earlier. So he should be feeling pretty good right now, actually.
Yeah, maybe he's upped the chances with his recent successes. The captain's like, damn, didn't expect you to make it this far.
You've gone from definitely going to die to probably going to die.
I thought you were going to drown at the water door. We didn't build respiratory shit into it.
We never opened the door ourselves. We didn't know that on the other side was no water, a magical land where water couldn't exist. So lucky you. I mean, that was good luck. That was good news. But Jack, he's upset with all these delays and these quests for needless gadgets, but Heather insists they are important.
Yeah, well, are they important? Because here's the fucking shopping list. First, it's Super Joe's good luck charm. We have to get it. We have to get it. That's it. Just a charm. Not a specific thing like a lucky rabbit's foot or a necklace handed down by his great-grandmother. Just a lucky charm. Nondescript. Who knows what the fuck that is or where it is. Next.
A single piece of cereal.
Could be just a lucky charm. A Pops that came. Or a lucky charm. Literally. Like literally what you said. Next, a magazine of ammunition. Again, nondescript, but okay, we could probably come across that. Next, an electronic permit for entry. Entry to where? Who knows? Like a slidey scan card to get into a gated neighborhood? Is it a QR code on a phone? No idea. Next, a helmet. Just a helmet. It just says helmet. Okay. Next, ninja iron boots and a blue communicator. Yeah. What the fuck are those things? And lastly, a three-way gun. Guns work one way, Caleb. I can't think of two, much less three ways.
Oh, Travis. Oh, Trav.
Hmm?
I don't want to call you an idiot. But you're being an idiot, okay? Because you have obviously not heard of this episode's sponsor, the three-way gun. All right, let me read this out here.
Why are guns so lame? Wrong! Guns are lame because they only do one damn thing. Why are you being so lazy, guns? Well, that changes now. Introducing the three-way gun. You heard me right. The three-way gun does not do five things. No. Not four things, huh? It does less than that. It does three things. Yeah, I said that in a weird order. One of those things the gun doesn't do is teach me how to do a proper serialized descending buildup for dramatic purposes. I gotta go to hype school to learn that. The three-way gun doesn't even believe in school. What a cool gun, right? So what three things does this three-way gun do? One, it's a bullet shooter. That was pretty obvious. Two, it's a conversation starter. Mostly conversations that begin with, give me your money or I'll shoot you. And three, it's a paperweight.
Wow.
Look, I know it sounds like just a regular gun, but that's because you, like Travis, are an idiot with a breeze-induced dishevelment of papers on your desk. Sure, you could shut that damn window, but then you'll get all sweaty. Why get sweaty when you can get a three-way gun? Hell, with a three-way gun, you can get someone else to shut that damn window for you. Mm-hmm. That's four things this gun does. Wait, I'm being told something. Huh? What? Okay. I'm being told by some gunless nut job of a lawyer that this is just a regular gun we're selling you, and that I should probably contact my own lawyer because we're currently being sued. Boo. Well, the joke's on him because I haven't sold a single three-way gun and therefore cannot afford a lawyer. Yeah, this gun also makes you go bankrupt because you bought a bunch of regular guns. Hey, that's five things. Buy this five-way gun, you dorks.
Wow, Caleb, I am so impressed with that ad. I'm glad you got those guys on board. I have pre-ordered not five, not four. Caleb, I have pre-ordered three-way guns.
You know, I'll say that was probably the weirdest ad copy we've ever had here on Tales. And what's weird is they wanted me to read it like all aggressive like that.
They did say that, I remember.
And the copy doesn't even tell us where to buy their product. You know, I'm beginning to think that maybe these ad spots on Tales of the Lesser Medium aren't real.
Where's all my money going?
What am I? You're paying for the ad spots?
No, I keep buying all the stuff.
Oh, gotcha. It's going to Bionic Arm Masturbatory Tool Creation Factories.
Ah, good.
We'll get there one day.
No, good. I'm happy
believe,
about that.
If we believe hard enough, we'll get hard enough. That's the slogan of the ad. Jack says he has that shopping list memorized. So Heather destroys it. Before he leaves, he asks Tiger for some advice.
I can't stop laughing about that. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. We can't. If what is it? If we believe hard enough, we'll get hard. What was it you said?
Yeah,
it was so good.
I don't know. It's almost like I wish this was recorded so you could actually like know exactly what I said.
Either way, it's going on a t-shirt. I don't care if anybody buys it but me, but I'm wearing it to Disney World.
You're going to get a lot of like men suffering from ED that just look at you and cry. Like, it's not true, man. It's not.
And I just hold the shirt out further for them. Nah, bud. Read it all. If you believe hard enough, you can get hard enough or something. Whatever Caleb said, I'll have to run it back.
That's going to be part of the quote in parentheses or whatever Caleb said. that's when the men suffering from ED kind of have a tear and they're like, Caleb, sounds like a real like Jesus of our times.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he's got the shopping list memorized. So Heather destroys it. Before he leaves, he asks Tiger for some advice. Tiger tells him to be careful when searching for the three-way gun, which he suspects is in a basement area of a waste disposal facility. Tiger says he's heard screams coming from there before.
Wow. You know what? It sounds like we should just let Tiger run around and get all this shit since he knows where it all is, and no one suspects an octopus delivery boy of espionage. Never.
Yeah. They keep calling this place back for more delivery.
Yeah.
And he keeps surviving. So, yeah, I think he's doing pretty good.
Send him in.
So let's fast forward somehow. I don't know. Jack, he finds everything on this list. And by the way, the list that Travis read earlier, that's a real list.
That was a real list.
Those were no make-em-ups. That was all in the book. So he finds everything on this stupid-ass list. And he's on his way to get that three-way gun. Now, the waste disposal facility smells like garbage, but isn't being heavily guarded by Hitler's army. So that's good. Jack's commander calls him and tells him that Hitler has been moving Super Joe around to keep them all guessing, and a Joe sighting was confirmed at the waste disposal facility just 3 hours ago. This is good news for Jack, who finally feels like the rescue of Joe is in reach. Jack marches on, swinging up and around the different levels of the facility, kicking the occasional bad guy ass before finally finding the three-way gun mounted on a far wall, and he takes it.
That checks out. You got to do some mounting if you want to handle a three-way, you know? That checks out. We'll put that on a t-shirt, too, if you guys want it. Just let us know. Email the show. Let us know.
So basically, our whole niche is going to be t-shirts that you never actually want to wear in public.
Yep. People buy those. I have so many t-shirts I could never wear outside of my house.
It's true.
I have a lot. I can't wear them around my kid.
Even inside your house, your wife just rolls her eyes all the time.
Yeah. I have a Doom shirt I can't even wear around my kid because it makes her cry. I'm like, when will this not scare you so I can wear it? I love this shirt.
If it gets down to between the shirt and you, honey, it's probably going to be the shirt.
Yeah. Shirts are forever.
We can recycle you anytime we want. Right in the bin with you. So the three-way gun, it works like you may have suspected. It shoots straight up and also to the left and to the right, creating a half circle of chaos, and requires its own PhD in hunter safety to operate. I don't know how you get that. Back outside, Jack gets to his helicopter and radios command. Command tells him that Super Joe was recently moved again, this time to an area called, cryptically, Stage 7.
Huh.
But they can't be sure because the double agent there was captured and killed.
Ooh.
That's not the worst news, though. The commander goes on to say that Hitler has held back until now because Albatross wasn't finished, but now it's ready and can, in fact, destroy the world. The hand found the Albatross's inventor, the evil Master D, and forced him to make the final connections.
Ooh.
Now, Jack has heard the name before. Master D? He asks. Is that, like, short for the maniac who calls himself Master Destructo?
Wow, turns out, though, it is. And yeah, with these names, it's like they wanted to form Slipknot, but then just settled on world domination instead. Playing instruments is too hard.
I like that Master D, he felt like people might get the wrong idea about him with a last name like Destructo, so he shortened it. And then proceeded to make a world-destroying super weapon.
Yeah.
It's like if a guy named Mike Plummer changed his name to Mike Smith but still became a plumber.
Yeah, just didn't want the label to follow him everywhere, you know?
Yeah, and then he just wanted to go where that label would have led him anyway.
Yeah.
He wanted to do it on his own terms, damn it.
You know, sometimes destiny is real.
On his way to this mysterious area known as Stage 7, Jack comes up against giant rats, bad enemy soldiers, robotic turrets, and manages to dodge a collapsing tunnel. He uses the three-way gun to wipe out enemies closing in around him, and even used his hot finger once to make an enemy's gun so hot it burns his trigger finger clean off.
That is a bit Looney Tunes. In fact, I think Bugs Bunny has done that.
and then the bad guy goes, "No, it's rabbit season." Now he has to ascend to a nearby tower, and he uses his grappling hook to ascend up ledge after ledge. To get to the adjacent tower where Super Joe is held, Jack must swing across a line of poles, about 30 or so, that separate the two buildings using his grappling hook. By doing this, he will be in the open, vulnerable to fire. It's dangerous, but there really is no other option. As he sets off, he uses his three-way gun to wipe out a few approaching enemy choppers and then quickly gets swinging, pole to pole, toward Super Joe.
Man, that just made me think of that that safety dance song. We're doing it from pole to pole, yeah. You know that part of that song?
Toward Super Joe, Super Joe.
Mm-mm, everybody's mm-mm, doing mm-mm. The Joe.
I always thought safety dance was a euphemism for masturbating. Am I wrong?
I don't know. I think whoever made the video was tripping some serious LSD balls, though.
While masturbating, I like to believe.
Yep.
Once in the neighboring or just wearing a condom. This is the safety dance. Hey, babe, you want to do the safety dance?
There you go. Maybe that's it.
Maybe that's it. In the 80s, when everyone wore condoms.
Maybe the song was a PSA. It failed.
Maybe so. Once in the neighboring tower, he's greeted by a robot that tries to murder him with a machine gun arm full of machine gun bullets.
Oh, dear.
Jack fires the three-way at it to no avail. Remembering he can shoot electricity, he presses the activator button on his arm, aims, and fires the robot and fries it. Past the robot is a giant door, barred shut, with bars that are no match for the strength of Jack's arm. For some reason, they didn't use the bars from earlier that Jack couldn't break. You know, the cage bars we told you to remember about?
Seriously. Yeah.
Oh, well, lucky break, I guess. So he just pulls these bars apart and steps inside to see Super Joe there, smiling back at him. He did it! He found Super Joe alive!
Yay! Hi, Joe!
After the initial shock, Joe finally asks Jack about his arm.
Yeah, funny story. So, you know, like, after we ate four boxes of pizza, and then there was, like, some ninjas and stuff, and then I, like, committed suicide, right? Well, I wasn't actually committing suicide. I'm sorry you thought I had committed suicide this whole time. That's kind of a bummer. But no, I was just trying to escape and leave you with all of the bad guys. So, second apology for the day, I guess. Anyway, any hadoozle, I lost my arm in that fall when I went out there. That's all I lost, though. Pretty good, though, right?
Not bad.
And then Joe replies, "So you're the bionic commando. Okay, you're like Hitler. He's been going nuts about you."
I just imagined Hitler You know, you think going nuts means he's angry, but I like to think that Hitler's like super into it, like, ooh, this fellow with the funky arm is really something. I sure hope we don't go up against and fight such a handsome and deadly fellow. Oh, sweet bionic commando, don't make me hurt you. Oh, please. My accent goes all to pieces when I'm smitten.
They plan to split up. Jack is going to head toward Hitler's headquarters, and Joe is going to gather intel about the Albatross. They leave here and head toward separate exits for the final leg of their mission.
At least it's not the final arm of their mission, right?
But not even going to give you the end of the rim shot on that one. After talking to Hitler, or Heather, after talking to, I guess the second time I've done that. After chatting a bit with Hitler, they decided this whole thing's a big misunderstanding. Let's go back and never have written this book ever. Sounds good. Handshake. See ya. So, as this is supposed to go, after talking to Heather to give her the good news about Joe, Jack agrees to pick her and Tiger up in the chopper on the way to Hitler's headquarters. Once near, he ejects himself from the chopper, leaving the two of them behind with instructions of what to do if he's not back by 1900 hours.
Yeah, it seems risky to leave two loved ones in a very visible and stationary target near where you think Hitler is. But here in Bionic Commando, you know, only enemy choppers are susceptible to the fate most choppers meet in Tales of the Lesser Medium. Maybe it's not a bad idea. I'm not comfortable with it.
Well, their track record is positive. They've left this giant, loud, obvious good guy helicopter hovering above enemy bases for at least 80 pages so far.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the data says keep doing it, is what I'm saying.
That's fair.
So let's fast forward. Jack comes to an unassuming room. It's been quiet lately. This is Bad headquarters, where Hitler's men should be stationed in droves to protect him, but no one is around. Inside this room is a coffin and a figure hunched over. The figure slowly turns and sneers back at Jack. It's the Hand, who says,
"So, you've come to die too, Jack Markson."
Who was in the coffin? Was Super Joe captured and now dead? Hand taunts Jack now, telling him to turn over his list of double agents and spies or succumb to torture. Jack refuses. With the press of a button, curtains high up in the room part, unveiling the completed Albatross weapon. Hand tells Jack he'll be destroying North America with it later that night, but Jack will be too dead to enjoy it. To which Jack should have responded, "Joke's on you, man. I wouldn't have enjoyed it even if I was alive, you weirdo." So there. Jack tries to sneak a hot finger at the Hand, but the menace is too quick, shooting a whip from his hand and disrupting the circuitry, breaking that part of Jack's bionic arm.
"They don't call me the Hand for nothing, Bionic Commando."
I guess they don't. And also, I can't not appreciate the sentence, "Jack tries to sneak a hot finger in at the end." At the end. That's great. Sneaking a hot finger. You know what? That might become the name of the episode. Bionic Commando, sneak a hot finger. It also sounds like a promotion from Domino's. Come on down this Friday, sneak a hot finger. We got two mediums for the price of one. You can take home a Diet Pepsi and some crazy bread. Sneak a hot finger.
They have a new product called the Stuffed Glove Pizza. And it's just a latex glove full of cheese that you stick your hand into. Hey, why don't you sneak a hot finger into this hand here?
Stuffed.
We'll do radical.
Oh, God. Stuffed Glove Pizza. That's hilarious.
Pizza's in quotes because it really is just a glove with
cheese and meat
cheese
and sauce. Yeah. You don't want to eat the glove part, okay?
Yeah.
Squeeze it out. Squeeze it out the wrist.
It's the only food where there is handwritten ink on the actual food that says, "Do not eat." So Jack tries to use the grappling hook, but the Hand's whip shoots out, wraps up the hook, and shoves it away. Jack backs into a corner, but now has a better view of what lies inside the coffin. Afraid he would see Joe, he cautiously peeks while keeping an eye on the advancing Hand. A head is now peeking over the edge of the coffin. It's not Super Joe's. It's the head of Master Destructo, the man who completed the Albatross. He was alive, and was now sneaking out of the coffin while the hand was attending to Jack.
Man, this whole weird guy creeping out of a coffin thing might be my favorite part of the whole story. It's got a weird, like, Dracula's awake vibe. It's just strange. I dig it, I think.
I like to imagine that Hand just doesn't understand how coffins work. Like, he knows that conceptually dead people in coffins operate within the same mental model, but he, like, forgot to... He doesn't know that you're supposed to be dead before you go into a coffin and it's a burial instrument. He's just like, okay, I know... let's see. I need you dead, right? And I know there's a coffin. Hey, can you just, like, lay down in the coffin for a bit?
That should kill you.
Okay, I guess that's good. Okay, we'll keep it. Okay, good.
That wasn't so messy. I thought that would be messier.
Yeah.
That wasn't so bad.
I don't know why they have, like they invite family over for this. This was like a pretty easy, simple thing. Huh. That's weird. Not as weird as my German accent, but pretty weird. Pretty weird.
It's all been weird today.
As Master Destructo pulls his pistol from his pocket and aims it at the hand, Jack tells Hand to tell him where Super Joe is, and if he does, Jack will hand over the names of all the spies. The hand laughs. He doesn't need to bargain with Jack. Master Destructo tried that, and now he's poisoned and will never wake up. Master Destructo, awake, took this dramatic opportunity to shove the barrel of his gun into the hand's back. Jack watches as the blood drains from the hand's face from the realization. Destructo pulls the trigger, killing the hand instantly, and then turning to Jack says, "You're next."
I mean, he could, you know, right then just shoot him. He could just shoot Jack. You know, Master Destructo could just aim at Jack's head and just shoot him dead right there, right? That's how guns work. You say, you don't even have to say you're next. You could just shoot the guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And also, with the hand dead, Jack's, like, crazy bionic arm grip thing is like, not like, it's he can use it now, right?
Yeah, he could just reach out and take the gun away, I guess, if he wanted
to. Yeah, he could just do that. He could do that. Yeah. Or he could use, like, the truth thing and be like, hey, are you going to shoot me? And then
he'd be like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. I am going to. Shit. Now he knows there's nothing he can do. Cause like I've just confirmed that is the future. I will be shot. But no, instead Destructo quickly runs up to the control panel and fires up the Albatross, telling Jack he wants to warm it up for North America and wants to use him as a test target, which fails some of the basic hallmarks of a good test scenario. Let's see. I want to test whether or not I can hit a target literally the size of a continent. So I should probably make sure I can successfully hit a single person. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, train on the worst case scenario, I guess.
Jack shoots the grappling hook at Master D, but misses. And as the Albatross lights up, Jack tries to find cover in the room.
Yeah, and it took me a while to realize that the Albatross itself, like, isn't a bomb. Like, when I think of, like, weapon of mass destruction that can kill like an entire continent, I think of something that goes boom. But this is actually like a literal weapon. It's described as like a submarine armed to the teeth and is really designed to destroy everything in its path, kind of like a Bullet Bill crossed with a Swiss Army knife.
Oh shit, then ride it to first place, Jack. That's what I always do, like, because I'm always in last place.
Mario Kart,
yeah, stuff. So Jack knows that to destroy Albatross, he has to destroy its power supply. That makes sense. I'd like to imagine this giant, like, walking mech has a cord to an AC adapter. Like, some dude has to constantly, like, string out more extension cord the whole time. So he fires the Albatross, taking out a few of the bigger weapons on the side, and then uses his grappling hook to attach himself to the weapon as the sky doors open to a blue sky and the Albatross begins to lift. What about Heather and Tiger? Too late to worry about them now.
Yeah.
Atop the massive weapon is a box with orange lights emitting from its edges. Is this the power supply? Jack reckons it must be, and so he fires on it until it explodes. Sure enough, the Albatross stops lifting and free falls back down, crashing and melting through the floors beneath as it falls. Jack did it! Yay! He destroyed the Albatross!
Man, that was easy. Good thing that power supply was exposed on top with giant orange beacons indicating it. Wow.
Jack radios command. It was an OSHA guideline. Yeah. Like, you got to do this.
You have to.
We got to be able to easily access
Even
it.
Even if you're going
to
blow up the world, OSHA's like,
We can't have anyone getting harmed on the way to blowing up the world. Come on. Jack radios command. Everyone is excited. But Master Destructo and Hitler are still alive. Intel says they've boarded Hitler's private chopper. Good news, on a nearby rooftop, they have stashed a bazooka for Jack. Just in case, you know, this exact scenario played out, we suppose. Just as the chopper ascends into the air a few dozen feet, Jack grabs the bazooka, aims, and fires it at Hitler's chopper, hitting precisely on the gas tank, sending the chopper whirling in a blaze back toward the ground where Hitler's army was gathering.
Boom! Tails combo strike. Got the chopper and Hitler. Ba-bow!
Hitler's voice then rings out over the loudspeakers.
Comrades, I have ordered this tape to be played in the event of my death. Without me, the bad empire cannot live on. I do not want any second-rate commander taking over my troops and my dreams. Hitler alone will be remembered as the leader of bad. I have made sure none of you will disobey my wishes. When this tape ends, it will activate a self-destruct mechanism. Comrades, I am taking you with me to death door. You have 60 seconds to prepare yourself to die. Farewell.
Oh my God. 60 seconds?
Farewell.
Oh, that's not very much time.
Farewell, I said. Farewell.
This gives Jack less than a minute now, after he's processed how exactly long 60 seconds is, to get back to Heather and Tiger. And he also needs to locate Super Joe. Oh, man. Where's Super Joe? Okay. Well, what follows is the most impossible feat ever accomplished by a Tales of the Lesser Medium hero.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? In less than a minute, less than 60 seconds, Jack radios Heather, who tells him Joe is held in a cell at the bottom floor of a nearby prison, and Jack tells her to bring the chopper there to meet him. So assuming they're both on the same exact same page here, 10 second conversation, maybe?
Maybe.
So then Jack then finds a trap door that sends him toward the prison and descends several flights to reach a basement where he finds a cell guarded by two of Hitler's guards who draw their weapons on him. So finding the door, then
sliding
down,
yeah,
several flights of stairs. Maybe he jumped them, maybe he rolled. I don't know. Okay, we're talking another... Already we're after 60 seconds. This is
yeah, that alone took 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, because he also punches them both out cold. He rips the cell door open with his bionic arm. He grabs Joe with his bionic arm, then ascends upward with his bionic arm, because apparently this prison has no ceilings. Joe then attaches himself to the bottom of the helicopter that Heather and Tiger are already in. They ascend upward as Hitler's compound hits one, resulting in destruction of his entire Pacific compound. Yeah, you know, less than a minute stuff. And that's the end.
That is the end. That's how it ends, with Hitler and his compound and the hand and Master Destructo and the Albatross all dead, and we only managed to save two innocent people. I mean, technically the world, but I mean,
if
there's a video arcade, there's bound to be at least, I'm going to say, 10 other kids like Tiger that could have stood to get out of there.
But yeah, that's true.
They're dead
but
now.
We never actually saw the Albatross working. He could have been lying this entire time. Right. It could have been the Great Wizard of Oz, man behind the curtain kind of thing. It could have not even been a real submarine bomb.
I mean, anything that was constructed by a guy who goes by Master D, I just don't trust it.
Unless it's Funky Rhymes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
Probably did have some funky rhymes. When I say heat, you say la. God damn it.
I would love for Hitler to start that. I say hit, you say la, hit, and then everyone in the audience goes, no.
That is not how it goes. No. Nine. And also, they don't mention this in the book, but in that same 1 minute where all that heroism was taking place, Jack also ate 5 cans of beefaroni and a 4-foot baguette. And that was somewhere around 40.
Wow, they make them in 4 feet. Huh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was somewhere just right around 42 seconds in. Like, the dude is amazing.
Wow.
He can pack in the calories and say, okay, now the end. I just wanted to get that last part.
Of all the things that were in that list, him eating a lot of food in less than a minute makes the most sense. That's the one thing I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you can do that.
I get it.
He's a regular Joey Chestnut. Super
what?
Joey Chestnut.
Who the hell is Joey Chestnut?
Oh, that's the guy that eats all those hot dogs on July 4th. You see the
you say that like that's a normal, like that's known information.
Yeah, he's like a world eating
star.
The guy
who eats hot dogs.
Dude, okay. Yeah. Joey Chestnut, that's a household name.
Is it?
I mean, this household. This one. Mine.
So when your kid doesn't eat all her food, you're like, come on. Who's my little Joey Chestnut?
I do.
Clean your plate.
I do say that. And then she will just take her remaining 52 hot dogs, dip them in water, and chug them down like a maniac. It's pretty wonderful.
I like that she has 52 hot dogs left, and that's the point in which you're frustrated with her.
Like, yeah. You've only ate three.
Come on. You have 52 left. You can. This is easy.
Do you know
come
how
on.
Long I've been on the grill today? You will eat your dogs, ma'am. Yeah, Joey Chestnut. Look him up.
Okay, I'll believe you. I'm not going to look him up.
Yeah.
So that's the end. What do you think? What do you think of this game and this book, Travis?
I mean, this is a rarity where I think. Well, I don't know if it, nah, I don't know what I'm saying right now. But I don't feel like the book was good. I liked the Blaster Master one. I thought the Ninja Gaiden one was really good. Mm-hmm. This one, I was too, was this one of the earlier ones or something? Cause this one is just too far-fetched. Not that that's bad. Games are far-fetched. I get it. But like, it felt lazier mm-hmm. than his usual work.
Incredibly lazy. Like I alluded to earlier, it was very obvious. He just kind of described each of the levels in the game. And that was kind of where he topped out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good. I'll just do that. What should I call this, like, the Jungle Ruins? Nah, Stage 7. You just call it Stage 7. I mean, that's what the screen says when I make it. So that stage says Stage 7, so you just call it that. Right. That's him arguing with himself about the logic here.
He's yeah.
Like, should I? I don't know. You know what I love, Travis?
Yeah?
I love words, right? I love words.
Oh, I know that.
I love how you can like you see a word and you think it in your head and you get like a picture. You're like, I know what that word means, right? And then you're all happy and you're even happier when you realize there's another word, right? Mm, and wow. Then another one and then another one and another one. This keeps happening over and over and over again until you have this like story, right? It's almost like a train. Like you start at the engine.
Uh-huh.
That's the first word of the book.
Yep.
And then you go from train car to train car to train car to train car. And you get at the end to the caboose and you're like, wow, there's a lot of words. I love words. I love seeing a lot of words. But sometimes, and I think is what the case is here, you get what's called a train wreck.
Ah.
And that's when the words aren't good.
Yeah.
These
were bad.
All.
These were bad words. B-A-D-D.
These were bad words. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These were bad words. If Nathan Drake were running along the top of this story train, he would have like not tried to stop it from wrecking. He would have been like, just do it.
Just do it.
He would I guess whispered, like he does in all those yeah. in all those games.
Right. But this time he would have whispered like, just fucking wreck.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Do it. Get wrecked. Get wrecked.
Get train. Wrecked. Yeah. This was a rough train.
It was bad.
But you know what? We helped it. We, you know, and by extension, I played Bionic Commando. I never finished it. I played it when I was a kid. It was hard. I didn't really get the hang of it.
Yeah. It's.
I didn't get the swing of it either. But... I don't know that the book helped the game all that much. I feel like, you know, for Blaster Master, I really like the flavor text that he put around that world. I thought that fit pretty mm-hmm. good. I really enjoyed that one. This one, I feel like it kind of detracted from, like, I feel like the game somehow...
You hate the game now.
Yeah, somehow it did something weird. But I think we resurrected it. We've, much like Capcom resurrected Hitler, we've resurrected Bionic Commando and made it... Wow. Better. Now, that parallel only works just for the resurrection bit. I don't think that this podcast is Hitler. I'm just saying.
Could you rephrase that without saying we?
Oh, boy.
And instead just say...
Caleb resurrected Travis. Hitler. But we got to kill Hitler. How fun is that? Man. I woke up this fun. Morning excited. I was like, later tonight, Caleb and I are going to kill the shit out of Hitler. And I can't wait. This is going to be great.
And as your daughter ate her... 49th hot dog. She was very confused. One, who Hitler was. I mean, I don't know if you've gone through the Hitler bedtime stories yet. She's probably a little too young for those.
Well, she's turning four. I've already given her the sex talk and the Hitler talk.
Same night, too. That was a confusing night. She's going
to... I'm getting them out of the way early. That way I don't have to worry about it when she's older.
That way you don't have to be bothered by it.
Yeah.
It's a selfish move, Travis.
I mean...
I know you.
I'm admitting it, you know.
But she was also learning. She was getting potty trained at the same time.
Yeah.
She was also learning that Santa Claus isn't real.
You can't say I didn't have the talk, though. I did.
That's true.
I did my part.
You did say the words.
Yeah.
And as I've established, words are great. Well, did you like the game at all? You said you liked the game?
Yeah, it's okay. I haven't played it in a while. It's not been on a NES friend just yet. I need to go back and revisit. It's probably better than I remember. My memory is marred by frustration. It's got to be better than the book. Neither are as good as this podcast. I know you played a more modern Bionic Commando, which is where you got that reference earlier. Did you like that one?
It's definitely better. Still not a great, super great game, but it's definitely held in higher esteem than the original, I think. I feel like there are definitely fans of the NES original, and some people do say it's one of the better games, but I, like you, haven't played it in a very, very, very long time, and all I remember is it being incredibly difficult and frustrating. But I also thought the same thing about Blaster Master, and that game turned out, now that I played as an older person, I freaking love it. So
yeah,
I don't know,
awesome.
Maybe Bionic Commando for NES is the same way.
Could
but
be.
But yeah, the 2009 one was better, and there's a couple other games in the series, but the 2009 one is the one I remember.
It sounds like, if with a ghost wife in his arm, we should have covered that for a Tales. And it's not too late.
I think canonically, though, the arm, it does have his wife's ghost in this one, too.
Really?
Because I think the 2009 is a sequel, but it's in the sequel then there when he learns, oh, yeah, that's your wife is in there. Yeah.
Something the commander forgot to tell him, too. He's like, by the way, you got two hooks. Oh, gosh, dang, it slipped my mind. Your wife's in your arm. Maybe it was because he kept asking if he could masturbate with it. They're like, don't tell him his wife's in there. We'll never get it off him. He'll be stuck on that goddamn arm. He'll never go find Super Joe. Wait until he comes back.
Well, he was going to be anyway. So really, like, you know.
It's true.
I think he would have put a wig on it and be like, haha, now honey, you have no say over the kinky stuff I want to do in the bedroom.
You think he put lipstick around like the forefinger oh, and thumb?
And of course he did.
Two googly eyes right there on that knuckle.
Oh honey, I love you.
Like a sock puppet. Man.
And then as soon as he wrapped his girthy rod around it, he also made the gagging sounds with it.
Wow.
With his hand.
Jack.
Yeah.
Come on.
I know, Jack, he shouldn't have done that. I agree.
That's too far.
Bad guy.
There were people in the room, dude.
Yeah.
All right.
Most of them were egging you on, which they shouldn't have done. Anyway.
Well.
This was fun. This was fun.
This was fun. It was good to be back. I hope we can crank out some more episodes soon. Sorry for the wait, just how it goes. We got another series that we're working on that we're about done with. Got to play the last game and write it up. And we're going to try to do more one-offs as time allows. But we're both busy guys. But we do enjoy this, so it's not going anywhere. It's just going to take a while for the good stuff to come out. So hope you enjoyed Bionic Commando. And that's going to conclude yet another Tales episode. Goddamn, we did it again. Be sure to subscribe. That way you know a few weeks from now when you get another one. They don't come out every week. We're a surprise podcast. Surprise podcast! And so you want to stay tuned. Get subscribed.
And if you would be so kind, please rate and review us. Think about this. You're listening to the very end of this episode. After all of the good stuff is done, you're still listening to it. Obviously, you are a fan of the podcast and especially a fan of this episode. It only kind of makes sense, really, to make that a part of your personality and actually rate and review the podcast, right? Like, do it. Just do it. You can do that on any of your podcast places of choice that allow reviews. iTunes is probably the one we would prefer if you could do that. Also, you can reach out to us. You can use Twitter. You can reach out to us collectively at Tales Lesser. You can reach out to me, Caleb, at Caleb J. Ross. You can reach out to Travis at Trav Plays Games.
And please do. You can also send us an angry email about anything that we got wrong, including German accents, that recipe for schnitzel that I went over earlier, any of that stuff. Polycopodcast@gmail.com. We'll put those right in the old spam folders. Please reach out to us there. You can also go over to polymedianetwork.com. Man, since we've talked to you guys last, if this is the only Polymedia podcast that you consume, which would be weird to me, but that's okay, the network has grown considerably. We got some new podcasts. We got Point and Drink Adventure with our friends Pam and Petey that came out. Uncle Doug's DVD Bin, a movie podcast that I'm on with my improv pal Kevin. And also we got Goosebumps. A podcast that I do about the Goosebumps novels by R.L. Stine with my pal Dylan. And then all the mainstays are still there, your Drunk Friends, your Poly Kills, your Indie Quests, and so forth. So please head on over there. Check out all the cool stuff that we have. We also have to give a shout out to Brad Sucks, who loaned us the intro and outro theme for this podcast.
Thank you so much for listening.
And the tale has been told!
Hitler is beginning to doubt my strategies. There must be no doubts, no hesitations. Cat, why do you cat? Hitler is beginning to beginning the beginning. Fuck you. Hitler is beginning to doubt. Fuck. So, you've come to die too, Dick Marson. Marson, fuck. Hitler is beginning to doubt my strategies. There must be no doubts, no hesitations. There's a train. Why is the train driving? Fuck your train.